Testing 1, 2.
Blog
three.
Talk Radio.
We're on.
David.
Oh, there you are. Wow. I think we're the only one on at the moment. Wait a minute. Here it comes. Here they come. Hello, Michael.
Hey, David. How you doing?
Oh, glad to hear your voice. Hello, Soil.
Hey.
Wow. I gotta say I'm sorry.
Hello?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. All right, sorry, we had some technical issues. The site in New York is having issues, and so we are a little late with the show, but word went out that we're back on air, so we are back on air, and I'm so glad that there are several of you that are calling in, helping to get this done. But since we're behind a little bit, let's just get right into the show. One of the things, the first thing that I wanted to bring up was the Rittenhouse trial. And, you know, it just seems like there's a lot of racial things going on. Auburn, that thing is going on. But anyway, here's a young man who carries a gun across state line, which is alone a felony offense, shoots people. And he's let off. So I think society, there are a lot of people in society now that have a lot of, you know, they're not trusting our legal system. What do you think, Michael?
Hey, David, thanks for calling me at first, because this is a topic that is close to my heart. Yeah, I'm happy to see that people are starting to all of a sudden not trust the legal system, because black people in our community, we've not ever trusted the legal system. We've always known it's been biased and rigged, and it's always been biased and rigged against us. This was just a perfect example of white privilege on display. Okay, I just opposed that 17, now 18-year-old young man with Trayvon Martin. May he rest in peace. Also a 17-year-old man who was literally minding his business, not looking for trouble, and ended up dead, and the person that killed him gets off. But in this case, we have a 17-year-old white kid who was absolutely positively looking for trouble, so much to the point where he strapped himself with an AK-47. He kills not one but two people, and he gets off. So Kyle Rittenhouse gets to go on and be a martyr and make millions of dollars while Trayvon Martin is in the cemetery. That is just white privilege on display. That's the unequal two-tier criminal justice system on display. It's American racism on display. It's just America on display. Let's just call it that. And I'm glad the world is finally getting to see what's really going on underneath that scab when you pull it off of this racist Jim Crow country.
Well, all right, Ron, what are your thoughts?
Well, Michael, I thank you for explaining it the way you did, because and you know, I most of the time, 99% of the time, I think I side with you on issues, and I do so in this case as well. But originally, I was struggling trying to figure out how this became a race issue. So thank you for enlightening me. And the reason I say that I was struggling to figure out why this turned into a race issue is what I saw, and mind you, I do not know as much about the case as I would like, but what I saw was a white guy shooting a couple of other white guys. And so I was trying to figure out how did, you know, why are the African Americans upset over this? So now that you clarified it, I understand fully and side with you. The thing that really upsets me, though, and I was actually having this argument with my brother, who doesn't believe the same way I do, by the way. What the hell is a 17-year-old doing carrying an AR-15? Only in this country, or only in countries where you've got the cartel or drug dealers or, you know, the mafia or whatever you have. Why is a 17-year-old carrying an AR-15, and why is that okay? I don't understand that. And then my brother said, this was really interesting. He actually caught me off guard. He said, let me ask you this. If you're driving down the highway and a bunch of people surround your car and try pulling you out of the car, are you going to run them over? And I said, well, of course I am. And he said, well, that's the equivalent of an AR-15. You're using a deadly weapon, and you're killing a bunch of people at one time with your car. And I didn't know what to say, and I'm wondering if anybody has any comments about that. Michael?
Okay. I mean, if no one else wants to take it, I'll take it. I don't know about comparing the automobile to an AR-15 because, you know, an automobile, yes, it's deadly and can kill and it's dangerous, but, you know, an AR-15 fires off hundreds of rounds of bullets that can go hundreds of yards. So I don't know if you could compare those two. They're not equal when it comes to killing machines. They're both deadly killing machines, but one's far more deadly of a killing machine. One was designed to be a killing machine. The other one was just designed to transport people from A to B. So I reject comparing the two, Ron.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And I told my brother, I said, well, you know, why would anybody need a semi-automatic or, you know, a gun that shoots a bunch of bullets off at once if you're just being, you know, attacked in your home by an intruder, a person or two? You don't need that to defend yourself. But I'm curious to hear what Darius, if Darius is on, because I know I think you're on the other side of this, Darius.
Darius is on.
Yeah, Ron. Thanks for thinking about me, man. I'm so glad that David started out with this. I also want to say, Ron, I'm glad that you and your brother are talking again. Even if you guys are disagreeing, it's good that you guys can have a dialogue, man. So that's good news.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that.
Thank you.
Let me start off by saying the only miscarriage of justice here is CNN, MSNBC, and the other liberal networks. And the reason I say that is because this right here is a result of misinformation. So I, too, Michael, like you, was confused. I'm like, okay, so how does a 17-year-old kid carry a gun across state lines and not be guilty and shoots these other people and gets off? And this was before the trial, mind you. So I want to say that I'm disappointed in you guys because I thought that you guys would be a little bit more informed and just not listen to the sound bites of CNN and MSNBC, because I actually watched the trial. So let's start off with the first lie that the media has told us. He did not carry a gun across state lines. The gun was in Kenosha, Wisconsin, where his father lived, and he lived also. So that was two lies. They said he didn't live there. He crossed state lines because he wanted trouble. Those both were lies. The third lie was the charge should never have been brought against him for carrying a gun because in Wisconsin, a 17-year-old is allowed to have a long barrel gun. Now, I grew up in South Carolina. In South Carolina, if you were 15 years old, you were allowed to have a long barrel gun. And I don't know if that's still the case. But that law was put in the books because a lot of people live in rural areas that had farms and things of that sort so they could protect themselves and protect their livestock. So those laws are still on the books. So Kyle Rittenhouse didn't break any laws at all by having a gun at that time. Also, he was there because the police failed. The governor and the mayor failed to protect its citizens and their businesses. So Kyle Rittenhouse and a few other people were asked to help protect their businesses from getting looted and burned. He didn't go down there saying, I'm just going to shoot some people. Wasn't racist because it was three white guys on one white guy. But if you want to call that racist, Michael, I'll go with that argument. But it has nothing to do with race. The other situation is, if you look at the video, which is very hard to find because YouTube and Facebook and Twitter have taken down anything that doesn't fit the media narrative. So when you look at the video, and it only takes about maybe 3 minutes, there are two videos. The first one is a drone video. And the drone video shows, I can't remember his name, I'm sure you guys have already called him a hero, the guy who was chasing Rittenhouse, the first victim, Rosenbaum. Rosenbaum was chasing this man between cars, chasing him. He's running away. And he threw a Molotov cocktail at him. At that point, Rittenhouse turned around and fired his weapon and shot Rosenbaum. After that, he's running down the street. And as he's running, the two other guys are chasing him. He's running away, mind you, with the weapon. The two other guys are chasing him. One of the guys, Weiss, admits on the stand, I saw it with my own eyes, on the stand, that he had a handgun pointed directly at Rittenhouse's head when he turned around and fired upon them. If that's not self-defense, I don't know what is. But the reason I'm not faulting you guys and I'm not blaming people for getting upset and rioting in the streets, I'm blaming the media because this information, the media has this information, but it doesn't fit their narrative, so they're not telling people that this is actually what happened. And to compare him, Michael, to Trayvon Martin is a total misjustice. There's no comparison at all. And please do not tarnish the memory of Trayvon Martin by comparing this guy who was a child rapist who did time for raping 9-year-old little boys. And you guys are calling him a hero. This guy is sick. He's a lunatic. And Rittenhouse was running away trying to escape danger. He wasn't looking for it. He was trying to run away from it. Now, what I will say, it was very, very stupid of him to go down there knowing that tensions were high, you know, that there was a lot going on. He shouldn't even been down there with the weapon. I give you that. But had the police done their job, had the governor and the mayor protected these businesses and protected its citizens, none of this would have never happened. So I just challenge you guys, please look at the video. Look at the evidence. Look at what happened before you come out with all these wild theories of racism and innocent people just getting shot, because that's not what happened, and that's why the jury exonerated him, and that's why Kyle Rittenhouse is going to be wealthy, because he's going to sue these news organizations for lying, and you guys are believing a lie. Don't drink all of this Kool-Aid, I beg you.
All right, so what are your thoughts on this subject?
My thoughts are very in the middle, I would say. The media narrative that's on CNN, MSNBC, mostly the liberal media outlets, are portraying Rittenhouse as a white supremacist vigilante, which is simply not the case. I saw the video a couple of years ago, and this kid, he was running away, and they were chasing him, and they were pulling on his shirt. They were trying to get at him. And when you're being attacked in any form of capacity, your reaction is to fight back. And he said in the court that the reason why he went there because his father lives there, and I think his father owns a business or something. So yeah, he was going down there, but in the capacity on how he was doing it with a gun and everything and just being very visible and confronting people, that probably was a big mistake. If I was in that situation and if I was protecting my father's business, I would just stay inside the store. And if they're coming inside the store, then I do something. But just being out there on the street and being very visible to protesters and rioters, that does make yourself a target. And the person that Rittenhouse killed, I think two of the people that he killed, one of them, as was mentioned, was a child molester. And I don't think we should be defending child molesters. I don't think this has anything to do with white supremacy. I just think it's very funny, like how when black people kill each other and how when our own race and how our own people end up fighting each other and then when white people kill each other, it's just a big thing, the big spectacle on the news, how white people are killing each other. But this is something that's going on in the Hispanic and the black communities. And now that some white people die, they have it all over on TV because it's a big deal.
All right.
Also, David, let me say this to Sohail. The reason he was outside, Sohail, because it was a car lot. So he couldn't wait inside. They were going to burn the cars that were on the lot. So that's why he was outside.
Okay, I didn't know the whole story, but yeah. But, like, if he was in the car lot, he should have been within the perimeter of the car lot and had not been on the street like he was. I'm not sure the whole story, but yeah.
Yeah, he was on the car lot, and they chased him through the – if you look at the drone video, he's running in between cars trying to get away from Rosenbaum, and he chased him through the car lot. So he wasn't in the streets. He was actually on the car lot. Yeah.
Oh, that's a dang shame.
All right, Spencer, what are your thoughts on this subject?
I don't know too much about it. I know what happened and everything, and it's funny because I watched a little bit, or let me correct myself, I heard a little bit about what happened in the first couple of days of the trial, and that was one of the things that came up was that they was actually chasing him, and I thought that was interesting. I was like, oh, well, that's something I didn't know. So, I think in that sense, I felt that it was going to go a different way because I thought he was just out there and just acting crazy, and maybe they were yelling at him or something like that, then he shot him. I didn't know that they had actually, you know, it was a chase and he was trying to get away. So it makes everything different now because I could see how he could claim sick or how it was self-defensive. You know, you got two or three guys chasing you. One of them actually has a handgun. You're trying to get away, and, you know, you only 17, you're scared, you thought you was tough, but now, you know, people are chasing you now, and got, so you had to defend yourself. So besides that, I didn't watch too much of the trial, like towards the end, you know, I was just waiting for the verdict, but after I heard that, I kind of knew which way it was going to go. I thought that was a piece of information that most people don't know, or a lot of people don't know, or they just chose to ignore, you know. But that plays a big part in the case. And I know there's been a whole lot of, memes up there about, you know, there's no justice and, white privilege. But also, I like to point out that exact same day at around 2:34, there was a guy, a black guy, that was acquitted of all charges of attempted murder. I think he had 5 attempted murder by him shooting some SWAT at SWAT or something like that. So I know the verdict for Cal came down around 1 o'clock. His came down around 2:34, exact same city, Kenosha. And he was on trial for attempted murder for shooting at SWAT officers, but he got acquitted. So, you know, there's that, and it's the exact same city, you know, but you don't hear about that. I'm just pointing that out as an example of it's not so much white privilege. I just think that the justice system just got it right this time based on the evidence that was there.
All right.
Very good point, Spencer. I forgot about that. You're right. A black man was acquitted for shooting at police officers. that same day. So that's a very good point. I'm glad you brought that up, which flies directly in the face of white supremacy and a racist judicial system.
All right. Thank you, Darius. But I'm going to move on to the Ahmaud Arbery case, which has shaken black residents' faith in the justice system all through, because the jury finished deliberations without reaching a verdict in Charlotte's bill. And the defense attorney in this particular trial spent a lot of time trying to keep black ministers and black iconic civil rights leaders out of the courtroom, and even complained that the mother was crying because they showed pictures of her son. So these cases are popping up all over the place. What are your thoughts on that one, Ron?
Well, you know, Darius, and of course I watch the liberal media, so but I do try to mix it up, and I do try to watch Fox from time to time, whether you think that they're left or, you know, not too far right or not too far right, that's another story. But I don't know. I'm torn with this one. I know in the face, I don't know the details, but I know when you see it, without knowing, you know, any like real specifics, and you see three white guys chasing a black guy and killing him, the optics are horrible. So that's all I'll say. I mean, I wish I knew more about the case, but I really don't. But the optics don't look good at all.
No, they don't. All right, Darius, what are your thoughts on the Ahmaud Arbery case?
Totally different case. I mean, these guys should get the death penalty. This was an innocent man, and I'm going to say that this is racism, simply because, you know, these guys said, I think there was eyewitness testimony that said something about, I'm going to kill a nigger. So this was a racial incident. This was an unarmed black man. This was not a citizen's arrest. This was an ambush. And I kind of understand what the judge was saying by having – there was no need for Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton and all these civil rights leaders to be sitting there in the courtroom, because they're handling this trial. And I think these guys, there's no way these guys are not going to be convicted. But I can see where the defense is saying this does look like jury intimidation. When you have these icons sitting in the courtroom with their arms folded, staring at the jurors. So I think it's best if they step aside and let the system work. Let this handle, because you don't want to get of a mistrial. You don't want this thing to go back to trial. You don't want a hung jury. So they need to stay out of this and just let the system work. So far, it looks like it's working. So I do understand, not the judge, I'm sorry, I understand the defense's argument about them bringing in these civil rights leaders every day to sit in the courtroom.
So are you saying that there has never been a Caucasian courtroom where they came in and sit down and watch? And so because the courtroom is open to the public, that black ministers aren't public and should not be, that maybe the fact that they're there is support for the family, that you're saying that we as African-Americans cannot support our people in courtrooms? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that when you have icons, okay, black civil rights icons that are sitting there in a situation, it could be viewed as juror intimidation. And they're not needed. They're basically there to publicize the trial. They're there for publicity. They're not there for support. They're there because they're folding their arms in the audience to say, we're going to make sure that you guys do what we want you to do. And it can't be viewed that way. Am I saying we shouldn't support one another? No. Am I saying that their pastors shouldn't be there? Absolutely not. All black ministers? No. But these guys are racial. These guys are racial pimps, and everybody knows that. And by having them in the courtroom, it just adds another element to the trial that doesn't need to be there right now.
So you're saying all of our iconic leaders from civil rights are racial pimps? Oh, my God. Michael, what are your
David,
thoughts?
David, you're shoving words in my mouth, man. That's not
no,
what
I'm taking words. I'm taking the words. Michael, what are your thoughts?
No, these particular individuals, David, not all of our political, all of our leaders are. I'm saying these particular individuals are.
So Jesse Jackson is a political pimp.
Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, yeah, they've gotten rich off of race. Absolutely they
so
are.
So they come somewhere and support one of our people for suffering, then they are wrong for doing that?
I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm saying
that he was sitting next to the mother. The mother started crying, and the judge even said that it is an open courtroom. These are public people. He wasn't putting anybody out because that's what the courtroom is for. So I think the judge is right on in saying that that's just, you know, you're saying that these people can't come in because they're ministers, and the defense attorney was complaining about there's too many ministers in here who are supporting this case.
David, I'm not disagreeing with the judge's decision. I'm saying I can understand how that could be viewed as jury intimidation when you have these major iconic figures sitting in the courtroom looking at the jurors. I can see where that could be an issue. I'm not saying that they shouldn't be there or that they couldn't be there to support. I'm saying I could see the argument on the defense's behalf. That's all I'm saying. And it's not necessary. They're there simply for publicity. They're not there for support. If you want to support, donate to their fund.
Make a case for their fund so that it doesn't be like that. Michael, jump in.
Yeah, they absolutely have the right, David. They absolutely have that right.
Okay, Darius, I'm going to agree with you on one thing and disagree with you on another one, all right? I absolutely positively agree with you that Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton are two race-hustling pimps. I agree with that. They are. That's all they are. But I don't agree with you that in the courtroom, anyone should have the right to go in the courtroom, Darius. I don't care if they're race-hustling pimps or not, because you also got a bunch of Ku Klux Klan members in that courtroom. They just don't have their robes on, one of them being the judge. So I don't think we can discriminate on who's in that courtroom, race-hustling pimps or Klan members, because that's exactly what was in that particular courtroom. Now, in regards to what the guy, the attorney, said about, I don't want these black pastors in here, oh, that is racism on top of some more racism, Darius. How can you not see that? For a lawyer to stand in a courtroom and say, I don't want a particular color, let's forget that they were race-hustling pimps. Let's just throw that out there. These are some black men. He didn't want black men, too many black faces in the courtroom. That's what he was getting at. Because historically speaking, in the courtroom, it's only all white faces. And I know that from experience because, as I always openly say, I went to trial and was convicted for a crime I didn't commit, and I was the only black face in the courtroom. So historically speaking, yeah, it's only supposed to be white faces in the courtroom. So that lawyer just said the quiet part out loud. That's all he did.
Sewell, what are your thoughts?
When it comes to the Ahmaud Arbery trial, I don't know a whole lot. I remember seeing it on the news about a year and a half ago, and apparently this guy was jogging, and then apparently he trespassed into a property, and then those men followed him, and they killed him. I don't know the full story about it, but regardless of the situation, this is a situation where they should have called the police, even regardless of what he was doing, or they should have just minded their own business and just kept on going. The fact that they followed this guy to where he was and they killed him, and like, I forget who said it, but that wasn't a citizen's arrest. That was just a plain, cold-blooded murder. That was just basically a lynching. They took this guy and they killed him. And with the whole Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton thing, I do agree, like, they served their purpose when it came to promoting civil rights, but I think now they're just riding out the glory. I mean, Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton make millions of dollars from book deals and speaking and everything, and there really is no racism left. Now, does it exist? Yeah, but I'm talking about on a large public scale. It really isn't there anymore. So the fact that they're at that trial, you know, it's for publicity, I think, more than anything else, because it's blatantly obvious those men murdered Ahmaud Arbery, and it's blatantly obvious that they're not going to get away with it. And I think this is a southern state where it happened, and the southern state, it's likely a conservative state, so they're likely to get the death penalty or life in prison.
All right. Any other comments on this particular subject?
No. Yeah, real quick. I just want to throw something else. This is Michael. Hey, Darius, you were right. This was racist because, yeah, they did say the N-word. They did say, I'm looking to go kill me a nigger. So they did say that, and not to mention they had the Confederate flags on their license plates. So this was clearly a racist hate crime. And so, well, to your point about those race hustling pimp guys we were referring to, they're not needed anymore. They're totally needed. We just need a new group of black leaders. We don't need Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, because racism absolutely does still exist. So, well, not so much the people. You're a young guy, and I imagine your generation is not as racist as the previous two, but the systems that the previous generation set in place are still in place, and those are racist systems. So, no, America as a whole is not a racist in regards to people, but in regards to the systems that are in place, yes, they are racist and need to be broken down, and we need leaders to help do that.
You know, the one thing about these guys still being in courtroom and everybody's fussing over them, the idea that the young people today need leaders, they need to create a leadership they love and follow. Right now, it's basically rap guys, and if a couple of rap guys were sitting in there doing the same thing, I'm sure the defense attorney would have complained. Anyway, it didn't have to be ministers or civil rights leaders. It could have been Jay-Z sitting next to the mom giving her support. I think that the defense would have been just as much complaining about that. But we only got about 10 minutes left in the show, so I'm going to move around a little bit to get things that people would like to talk about. What do you have in your mind happened during the week that you would like to bring to the table?
I don't have a whole lot on my mind right now, but I would like to ask people, and this is going through the news right now. A majority of Americans are worried about inflation and gas prices, and the majority of Americans actually did a survey saying that they fear that the most next year will be worse than the current one. So with that in mind, do you believe that there is hope going out forward for a better year as the year is getting ready to end? Because a lot of people think with the inflation and the soaring prices and the shortages are going to persist. And what would you do to personally improve that if you were in the government?
Ron, why don't you answer that one?
Well, thank you, David. Unfortunately, I don't know that there's a lot that anybody can do about that right now. I mean, the pandemic is a huge part of why we're having these issues and the backlog of merchandise coming from abroad, et cetera. But something interesting that you said, inflation, and I just heard in the news today that's actually technically not the right word for this, because inflation is when prices have gone up above our spending capacity over a long term, and this is short lived so far. I mean, this has only been going on for a few months, and the bright side of this is that I've heard some people, including my financial advisor, say that there is light at the end of the tunnel, that prices are going to stabilize or even in some cases go down a little bit. I heard in the news just the other day that gas prices are probably going to go down. I forget when, but I think we just have to, sit tight and live through this these tough times right now. Yes, prices are high. I went shopping today, and I was like, and mind you, this was at Walmart, which is usually cheap, and I'm like, damn, the prices have gone up. So I think we just have to be patient.
All right. Wow, we only got a few minutes left. Sorry about the late start, but we won't be here next week, but the week after we'll be in on time. But right now, that I would like to jump over to Spencer because I have a memo from somebody asking me to ask Spencer what's going on with the Dallas Cowboys. I don't know why they're asking that question, but Spencer, what's going on with the Dallas Cowboys?
They're just on a losing streak right now, which we all knew what was going to happen. You know, they're losing right now to the Chiefs. They're going to lose this game, probably lose the next couple games. And they're just going to be the same old Cowboys. That's just what it is, you know. They just give everybody hopes up. It's like a roller coaster with them. Go all the way up, then you go all the way down. They just stay down when they still go down. So that's just what's up with the Cowboys.
Okay.
But besides that, we had a great fight yesterday. I don't know if anybody was boxing, but yeah, Sean Porter and Terrence Crawford fight yesterday for the championship belt. Weights, and it was a great fight. Now, I think the welterweight is the best division in boxing. But now we're just waiting on Jeffrey Spence and Terrence Crawford. They could get the deal done, and we could have a super fight like the next Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather fight, if you will. But yeah, that happened yesterday, and that was a very exciting boxing match.
All right. Tell me that again. I mean, what is that?
I just went on to a little bit about boxing. If it wasn't to boxing, I don't know if anybody seen the fight between Sean Porter and Terrence yesterday, but it was a great fight, which set the stage for Crawford and Spence to be, you know, like the next Pacquiao Floyd brother type of deal.
So, you know that Ohio State destroyed Michigan State by 56-7. Michigan was on a winning streak. What's going on with Michigan all of a sudden?
Michigan has always been good. I think it's going to be hopefully it's going to be a hard court match next week, but I think Ohio State is going to pull it off, and this will be John Harbaugh last year. He has never beaten him, and I don't think he's going to beat him this year or next year. And he fought there to specifically beat Ohio State, and he hasn't done it in the what, 5-6 years he's been there. So I think it's going to happen again. Lose this. I could be wrong. I think he's going to lose, and he's going to get fired. He's going to let go.
Oh, wow.
That would be
in the Buccaneers, you know, there was Antonio Brown, and he was like accused of obtaining fake vaccination cards by a former chef that he had. So is that something that you think is in the NFL and going to be a problem?
Hopefully not. I don't know why he fake vaccination card. I thought the NFL, NFL did an extensive, investigation on or just to see if players are getting vaccinated or not, but with the Aaron Rodgers situation, I guess. So if they did know, they're going to sweep it under the rug. Just so that he could play. I think the same thing could be said for Aaron Rodgers. You know, they probably knew he wasn't vaccinated, but long as he followed the protocols, then. So I don't know. I would get more on the case. The coach said it's not fake, or he is vaccinated and stuff of that nature, but give me a full investigation. So we'll see the outcome of this pretty soon.
Okay. Why is everyone saying that Tennessee Titans coach Vrabel should be coach of the year over Matt LaFleur and Bill Belichick? Why do you think that's so?
I don't know. That's my first time hearing that. Not after that loss we had today. Now, it would have been something to be said if they lost the best player and he was able to make a run. But right now, I would have to give it to Bill Belichick. One of the candidates would be Bill Belichick because everybody Go ahead. Bill, oh yeah, everybody. Patriots, and I don't like the Patriots, but right now they're becoming that old scary Patriots team that nobody really want to face. You know, they're disciplined, starting to gel, and that could make them potentially dangerous playoffs. And they might, but with the Bills lost today, they have a chance to take the division, make it into the playoffs. We'll see from there. So if they can make it to the playoffs now, pretty close to the year.
All right, we only have like a minute left, so I want to go around the table. Think about this, guys. Tell me what your favorite dish is for Thanksgiving. Let's just see what the consensus is. So, what's your favorite Thanksgiving dish?
Every now and then, every 2 years of a big Thanksgiving, and my aunt makes these ribs. With this really nice sauce on them, very, very great. And that's my favorite dish.
All right. Darius, what's your favorite Thanksgiving dish?
My dad cooks a pit turkey that's barbecued in an open underground pit. And the meat falls off the bone. I love it.
All right, Ron, what's your favorite dish?
That smells good, Darius. I like my mashed potatoes and with gravy.
All right, Michael, what's your favorite dish?
Pecan pie.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to The Man's Voice. We're sorry about the technical issues. We won't be here next week, but we'll be here the week after, and we'll send out the memos to let you know. Have a happy Thanksgiving, guys.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Kevin.
Happy Thanksgiving, guys. God bless.